As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Late night, midnight on the interstate, and I didn't feel so great until I saw the city.
Welcome back to Straight from the Source with Michael Russo. A really good show for you today. Very happy to be joined by Billy Guerin, the Wild general manager, another returning champion. This has got to be the fourth or fifth or sixth or seventh or eighth time Billy's joined me. He's kind of like my rainy day guest, but I thought this would be a good time to talk. Beginning of the hockey season, obviously the Wild off to a 2-1 start. A couple really exciting come from behind victories in L.A., rallied back from two goals down, two games in a row to win in overtime. Kirill Kaprizov, what a start to his NHL career. His first game, 3 points, and became the first, the third player in NHL history to score an overtime winner in his NHL debut. And how does he follow it up in his encore game? Another 4-3 victory two nights later. He becomes the first player in NHL history to get a point in each of his first two games in overtime, if that makes sense. So game-winning goal one night, assisting on the game-winning goal in overtime the next night. So we talk a lot about Kaprizov with Billy Guerin. But look, it's been an interesting start to the Wild season. As we see, they sort of still lack that one or arguably two center. Their power play is off to an 0-16 start. Parisi and Fiala have no points yet. There have been positives too. Kaprizov. We've watched Cam Talbot look absolutely awesome last night against the Anaheim Ducks. So those are the type of things. We've seen an unveiling of Jared Spurgeon with the captaincy. So those are sort of the headlines of the first week of the Wild season. They play the Anaheim Ducks again on Wednesday in this little fun baseball-style type series that maybe we'll see in the future in the NHL. And then they're going to come home for six straight games against the San Jose Sharks, Los Angeles Kings, and Colorado Avalanche, starting Friday, the return of Devin Dubnyk, who actually texted me during this show. So we'll be doing a story on Dubnyk for the home opener. And Ryan Donato also coming back here. But this podcast with Billy, really informative. We talk about his pursuit of eventually getting a center. We talk about the power play. I ask him about Marco Rossi. He's in a position where he can't answer a lot as they continue to try to get more information on Rossi's situation. If you read between the lines with Billy, we're not going to see Marco Rossi anytime soon. We talk about the really cool thing of a once New York Islander captain going to Jared Spurgeon's house and presenting the captaincy of the Minnesota Wild to Jared Spurgeon and his wife, Danny, and how Danny, the first new first lady of the Wild, how this is sort of a team effort. with the Spurgeons running the show behind the scenes of the Minnesota Wild. Let's see, what else do we talk about? We talk about the Penguins' first rounder and whether or not he's rooting for the Penguins to lose to try to get a lottery pick. We're talking about contract negotiations with Kaprizov and Fiala this unique season, and we even talk about food and weight loss at the end of the show, two of my favorite subjects. So without further ado, here is Wild General Manager Billy Guerin. Billy Guerin, happy to be happy that you're joining us out from Southern California. I'm looking outside. I got a neighbor right in front of me shoveling snow as it's coming down. You've got to feel a little guilty, Billy.
I do not. I don't feel guilty, Mike. Not at all. But you know what? It is amazing. I've grown to embrace the cold, embrace the Minnesota winters, and I look out my window at home and I constantly see people walking by, walking, biking, you know, nothing stops them. And I find myself now, it's actually great. I take my dogs for walks on Lake Minnetonka. And, I just think it's the coolest thing. You're walking by all the, you know, people ice fishing and cross country skiing and stuff. It's awesome. But I don't feel guilty about being down here, no.
You know, it's funny. Usually when I'm out in California with the team, I'll just take pictures of the palm trees and the beach and send it back to Minnesota in the winter. So now I know what people feel like when I do that. Don't you feel like, you know, after growing up in Massachusetts, that Minnesota weather does get a bad rap? Like, it's not like we ever get really, like, nor'easters and all that type of stuff.
Yeah, totally. And I mean, I guess, like, the only thing that if you're going to complain about something is when it gets like severely cold, like I mean, I love the snow. Like, I mean, we were so happy to have a white Christmas this year. It was awesome. The lakes being frozen. I mean, that is just like, it's just throwback stuff. Like, you just love it. Like I mean, everybody's out, you know, playing hockey or ice fishing. It totally gets, and you know what too? It's sunny. Yeah. You know, it doesn't matter how cold it gets or how much snow there is. If there's sun, you're good. And I find that we get enough sunlight to, you know, to avoid the depression.
Yep. No doubt about that. I always find it like fascinating is to me, like the only time I get like frustrated is like in March when you realize you have it like another month. You're all just like, all right, it's ready now. And it just like, yeah. All right. Like, well,
it was kind of funny. Like a couple weeks ago when the governor said, well, you can eat outside now. And it was like, oh great. It's, you know, it's December in Minnesota. Thanks a lot. But you know what, when you're driving around, there are people eating outside and they were having drinks outside. It was pretty funny to see. I don't know if they were, you know, sending a message, but it was, people just don't shy away from it. And I admire that. I love it.
Yeah. I remember a couple of years ago, it was mid April and the Winnipeg Jets were coming down here for a playoff game and actually had a turn around. That's how late we got a snowstorm. So hopefully
that'll happen this year.
Well, hey, Billy, you know, you guys are 2-1 on the season. A couple really exciting come from behind wins in Los Angeles, down 2 goals in the third period. Kirill Kaprizov, quite the integration into the NHL. Last night could have been a totally different game if you guys score in the first period. You know, Victor Rask has the one incredible play set up by Kaprizov and Parisi, and just I think the puck was deflected wide. The fourth line had a ton of chances. Who knows what would have happened if Fiala on that breakaways call draws that penalty. You know, you could very easily be 3-0, but last night, just sitting through that, was it aggravating to watch the power play not come through?
You know what? And I don't want to put it all on the power play because I think there's two things about the power play. You want it to score, obviously. But if you don't score, you don't want it to be a momentum killer. And I don't think it has been yet. Because I think we've generated chances. We're just a little bit off on finishing, but I think execution's been there. I think our entries have been there. Our puck retrievals have been there and our scoring opportunities. So I think it's a matter of time before things start to click or we start to get rewarded for that. Actually, in last night, I thought of the three games that we've played this year, last night was the best. We just didn't get rewarded. And, you know, that happens sometimes. I mean, John Gibson's a hell of a goalie. He played great, and their team played well. It was a good hockey game, and we could have won. But we can't, you know, we have to take the good out of that game, because there was so much.
Why do you think the entries have been so much better on the power play? Is it stuff that Dean has thrown on? Because I know that seems to be the big part of your game, that there's been a lot of tinkering compared to last year.
Yeah, well, I think it's simple. You know, they're being given their assignments, and they practice, and the players are focused, and they're executing. And you know, when you practice power play entries and things like that, it's amazing how much better you get at them. And you know, we've been practicing that quite a bit. And you know, like I said, hopefully the guys will start getting rewarded, because they've done a good job.
Last night was an example, I think, where Kaprizov was trying to force probably a lot of things to Fiala. Do you think that was, you know, is that a young guy, is that a set play to try to set up Fiala there? Or is that a young guy maybe, you know, trying to be respectful of somebody he's trying to get off the schneid three games in?
Yeah, I think they, you know, when you're at ice level, you see it differently. You know, when we're watching from up above, you're like, oh, don't make that play, don't make that. But on the ice level, it looks like it's there, and you've made that play before, so you try to make it. And then sometimes, you know, the other team actually will make a good play. It's amazing how that happens, but they're trying to win too. And I do think, you know, Kirill was probably trying to help Kevin out and get him going a little bit. You know, it's three games now, and he doesn't have a point. But you know, I think in the end, we just have to make the plays that are available, and you know, do what we have to do. And I think that'll happen.
What have you, Billy, learned already about Kirill Kaprizov as a player, as a person? You know, it's just bizarre, sort of in this day and age, as a beat writer, you don't really. No, all our only existence with this player is via Zoom. He seems like an engaging, infectious type of personality. What's he like behind the scenes when he's with his teammates, when he's with management, when he's with coaches?
Well, I mean, I can only tell you what I see. You know, I'm not behind the scenes with the players, but to me, it seems like he is a popular guy already, even with the limited English. Great personality that draws people to him. But the thing that I've learned most, I guess, about him is that he's the type of player that we want here, and that he's highly, highly competitive, and he's got great character. He has not shied away from any of the physical play. His competitive level is extremely high when he goes for loose pucks and 50-50 battles and things like that. He just doesn't shy away. So, you know, a good guy, a very good player with great character. And you know, we couldn't have asked for a better start for him.
That first shift of the game by him yesterday almost epitomized exactly what you said, Billy. I mean, he 1-on-3 in the corner, and Shattenkirk gets the puck. He muscles him off to get to Parise, who then fed Rask. But that's what I've noticed too about Kaprizov. We've all see his skill and all that type of talent, the type of things that he's done in overtime and 3-on-3 for you guys. But man, his compete level, his work ethic, his willingness to stay late, also go on the ice early. It's special and shows you how much he wants to be the best.
When you have the skill level that he does, and then you do these things, it really makes a difference. It can take a good player and make him great. It can take a great player and make him, you know, a legend. And Kirill's putting the time in, and you know, as our, you know, a lot of our guys are doing that. You know, it's something's changed here, and there's just a lot of extra work being done. You know, by the coaching staff, by the players individually. It's really nice to see.
After a game like last night, do you meet with the coaches? Do you leave everything to them to essentially break down a game and all that type of stuff?
You know what? I go in briefly after the game, just to touch base with them. You know, win, lose, or draw. You know, I'd like to remain consistent and not just go in when we're all in a good mood, even though I'd probably rather that. But no, and last night, you know, I go in the coach's room, and you know, we're talking about the game briefly and just kind of in general. And I said to them, you know, first of all, great job. And to a man, I'm happy with everybody. Like we played well enough to win that game. It was a good hockey game, but there were no complaints. Everybody played hard. Everybody played well. We just didn't score the goal that we needed to score. And then we move on. Mm-hmm. You know, the coaches have a much later night. Like I know, like Dino went back and looked at video. They met this morning at 10. They were going through a bunch of things. So, you know, I have other responsibilities, but hovering over the coaches isn't one of them.
Right, right. It's working the phones, like doing podcasts.
Yeah, exactly. I have to clear my schedule for you.
Yeah, exactly. Which we always appreciate here. It's amazing. Like one of the first podcasts I did was you and I at the Bell Center. Feels like 5 years ago.
God, it feels like 100 years ago.
Just in the stands talking hockey. Yeah, that's what I miss, is just sitting in the stands in an actual seat and listening to pucks go around. It's just some stuff that it's amazing the stuff you start to miss when you're not around the team. Luckily, I'm going on the Denver trip in a couple of weeks, so get to do that, and you'll be coming home from this road trip. The power play opening night was so good, and then the coaches did sort of change things up, I think in a lot of reasons, because the number one unit with Parisi taking draws, it almost felt like they were starting in their own zone because he'd lose a draw and then they'd have to go chase it down. Do you think that, you know, there's a chance that we'll go back and see that type of unit again, just to maybe get back to the type of unit that was buzzing the opening night?
Yeah. I mean, there's a chance you could see it. And, you know, I think the one great thing about our coaching staff is that they are they're a humble group of guys that are open-minded and willing to admit when something's not working, and take suggestions from each other, from me, you know, from Matt or Chris or whoever. They're just very open-minded, and I think that just makes things easier because you're willing to try different things. So I think really anything's possible.
Right. And Matt Sells, the Wild's chief analytics director of hockey analytics. I believe that's his title, right, Billy? And then Chris O'Hearn's the director of hockey operations. Last night, the one wrinkle that we did see that I don't know if I've seen is three defensemen on the second unit, at least in the first period. That was changed. Was that a way to try to get Dumba pretty much shooting away
on that unit? Yeah, I think it was just, you know what, just to try to get him, you know, to be the trigger man. And that's one, I don't know if we'll go back to that, but we'll see. but yeah, I mean, you know what, we have to have Matt shooting the puck, and he's got an elite weapon there. And, you know, the more he's, able to get shots on net, the better off we'll be, and the more opportunities to score we'll have.
I have a bunch of Twitter questions for you. I did want to ask you your first three games here. You know, what are the biggest things that you've learned about your team, both stuff that you're happy about and stuff that just needs to get better?
Well, honestly, I think that we've come a long way from last year in our resiliency. I think, you know, even when a game's close, we're comfortable playing in it. And, you know, I think that these guys genuinely are enjoying the changes and playing together, and they're having fun with it. So their attitude's been great, and I think it's awesome. What was the second part of that question?
Then the stuff that you haven't exactly liked or that must improve.
For me, You know what? It's not that I don't like it. Things that we can improve on are our net front play. We need to create better screens in front of the goalies at certain times. I think our puck placement on dumps can be better and keeping it away from the opposition's goalie. But for, you know, and then just, you know, hopefully we can cash in on the power play soon. But those are all fixable things. And the biggest thing is that the guys are playing extremely hard, and they've bought into Dean's system, systematic scheme, and all the other things are positive. So, I think we're in a good spot.
I want to ask you about just to go back in a little bit and talk about you going with Dean Evason to Jared Spurgeon's house about the captaincy. Want to ask you a bunch of questions also about goaltending and things like that. But center play is one area that I think is probably going to be a topic of, you know, all year long. How do you feel, first of all, that this team sustainably can win with the centers that you currently have, or is this an area that you might have to address in season this year?
No, I think we can. I think it's a matter of finding the right combinations. I mean, I think Nick Bjugstad last night played on the line with Nico Sturm and Ryan Hartman, and I thought they did a very good job. I thought Nick looked more comfortable there. I think when he was up with Zach and Kirill, that maybe he felt more pressure to make plays. And when you do that, your feet stop. And I think it's going to help him and just be in that role and just skate, you know, just get moving. So I thought that was a bonus. I think, you know, Bonino did a good job on his line. I think we're okay. I really do. I think if there's an opportunity to make our team better, like I said, at any position, we'll do it. And that, you know, that includes center.
How difficult has it been to make trades, you know, since really the offseason began? I mean, obviously you made a number of ones early, but now that the rules are more firmly in place, the way that it affects the cap, quarantine rules. I mean, we just saw, who was it yesterday that was, Aaron Dell claimed off waivers, but he's now got a quarantine for 7 days. How much do you know, wrapping your head around taxi squad rules, how much has that almost quieted a lot of the trade talk out there as sort of GMs and their lieutenants really grasp how to heck to run a team in the middle of this very, very bizarre season?
I think quite a bit. I mean, you have to really weigh that. Like, if you're going to make a deal, especially across the border, like, you know, the Canadian team's going to be without that player for, you know, for quite some time, and that could impact your whole season. So you have to, it's really delicate. You know, there's some limited chatter out there, but, you know, not much, but, you know, it's just, you just have to, you know, kind of tiptoe around it and make sure that you're thinking about every possible, you know, outcome to making a deal or, you know, every possible situation that could arise because of, you know, this new world that we're living in.
Getting back to the center conversation, do you think that, you know, we've seen Rask at number one center. We saw a little bit of Johansson at number one center at the end of the second LA game. The one line that's been really good for you guys that I understand why Dean doesn't want to, you know, tinker with is that Foligno-Greenway and Eriksson-Ek line. Is there a chance that maybe we see Eriksson-Ek get a chance up there, or would that be maybe creating another problem?
Yeah, it could be creating another problem. I mean, and as a player, Mike, the last thing, if you have a good line and you're having success, like, the last thing you want to do is have your line changed. Like, even if it's like, you know, the so-called first line or whatever, like, you just want to, you want to have success. And if you're comfortable playing with those guys, that's what you want to do. So, I'm sure Dino's thinking about every possible way to kind of, you know, create more scoring. And, but that line has been, any time they're together, they are a positive impact on our team. And it's tough to want to break them up.
Right. Let me ask you, as I mentioned, I got a ton of Twitter questions. About 50 of them were regarding one player that hasn't played for you yet, and that is Marco Rossi. I mean, as you can imagine, Billy, there was a lot of excitement when he was coming from the World Juniors and after you guys signed him in late October. What is the latest with his situation?
Oh, Marco's out with an upper body injury right now, and we're not – I really can't get into, everything that's going on with him. Long-term, he's okay. And you know what? He's actually staying with Thomas Vanek right now, yeah. which has been great. I mean, Thomas is, I don't really know him. I spoke to him on the phone once and seems like a super guy. And that's all I hear is how good of a guy he is. So we're extremely grateful for him and his family, taking Marco in and, it's been a blessing. Because I'd be a wreck if it was my, 18-year-old child, across the ocean, out and dealing with certain things. So,
right.
How is Marco? He'll be good. He's been great. He's been great.
Yeah. He's fine. He's fine mentally. I mean, that to me is he was so excited to come here. That's gotta be the toughest thing when you got something out of your control.
He's an extremely mature kid. And yeah, he's just taking everything in stride and, like a real pro and, we're disappointed, but we're doing the right things and we're anxious to get him back. All in due time.
Do you think that, whatever he's dealing with, that this is the type of thing that will, maybe give you second thought to even play in this season? Because obviously this was a weird year to begin with. And I know that you probably weren't thrilled about having to burn the first year of his deal regardless. Do you think that this might even give you a pause to just say, you know what, let's get him healthy, maybe keep him here just to, be here around the team, but not actually play him?
Yeah, you know what, I to be honest with you, the main thing with all the players is their health and mm-hmm. and that we take care of them as best we can. And that's the main thing. I haven't even thought about burning a year or not burning a year. That hasn't mm-hmm. even crossed my mind. The most important thing is the human being, Marco Rossi, and his health.
Right. I wanted to ask you about goaltending. Cam Talbot's gotten off to a really good start. And, it's funny. He said that he made it seem like games one and two, he wasn't exactly in love with the way that he played, but he felt like he just needs more time to play behind these guys. And we saw last night a much more dialed in goaltender. I wanted to ask you about Kakkonen, though. How hard is it to even spot him into a game right now when you have such little practice time and there's not a lot of back-to-backs to start the season? Does it make it difficult when you also want to give Callum Talbot a string of games to get him feeling comfortable? How hard is that?
Yeah, I think Cam's been great. I think he, mm-hmm. He's calm in the net. He, he makes smart decisions when playing the puck. I think he really gives the guys confidence. He was spectacular last night. Like he was great. And, as for Kapo, I think it's just a matter of us getting him in, mm-hmm. making the decision like, hey, let's just do this because it's the right thing. And Cam's going to need some rest and he can't play every single game, even though you want to play him every single game. But no, we need Kapo to get the opportunity to show us what he can do and help our team.
Before I get to Twitter questions, Billy, I did want to ask you also about Kaprizov and Fiala, both entering or in their last year of their contracts. How do you, as a GM, how do you project both these guys out? Not to make you put you in a position where you got to negotiate a contract on the podcast, but that's got to be one of the toughest parts of a GM is trying to figure out this offseason. All right, how long do we go with these guys? With Kaprizov, you only own his rights for 3 years, so you really might have to make a long term decision this summer, even if he maybe doesn't have the pedigree yet of exactly what he's going to be. How do you go about that internally with the your staff?
Yeah, I mean, I we have to look at kind of like the history of players like this and get all the data and see what, you know, historically players like this have signed for. And then we, you know, you have to take into account what he's done in his kind of platform season and see where you want to fit him in your payroll structure. You know, it's, you know, there's a lot to go in it. Chris O'Hearn helps me out and does the lion's share of the work on that and, kind of gets everything, you know, arranged and we'll come up with something, but it definitely takes a good amount of planning. I mean, we've already got things kind of penciled in on where we think it will be. because that's, you know, you have depth charts and you have to look, you know, 1, 2, 3 years into the future where you're going to be and plan accordingly. So it's you know, it's not just done last minute, but, you know, we gotta kind of assume some things too and, you know, prepare that way.
Is it safe to say on Kaprizov that you will want to go long-term just because it almost feels like a bridge deal doesn't really work when a guy could become UFA in 3 years?
Yeah. I mean, you know, by the way things look right now, then yes. But you know what? Hey, look, it all depends too. Like, you know, for some reason we've turned these bridge deals into monster deals and, yeah. You know, we have certain rights as a club and, we're going to use them. And, you know what, when players hit, you know, unrestricted free agency, they use that to their advantage. And when we have certain rights and the rules are in our favor, we will use them to our advantage. And that's the way it is. I can't believe I'm saying that being on this side now, because
yeah, I know
my history as a player, but, after two holdouts and the Devils and the Oilers after two yeah, holdouts yeah. And then, you know, free agent stuff. So, but, no, hey, look, I went through two tough contract situations with Lou Lamoriello and then Glenn Sather. And, you know, they used their rights and the tools of the CBA to, you know, to their advantage. And I don't blame them. That was the right thing for them to do. And that's what we're going
to
do.
All right. You got to tell me what it's like to have a contract dispute with Lou Lamoriello. I mean, that cannot, I'm like, were you scared to turn on your car or what?
No. You know what? Lou, in that situation, he's just very matter of fact. And you know what? He was always very professional, always never, you know, he doesn't raise his voice or anything. He just says, you know what, Billy? That's great that you think this, and this, but this is what I think, and I'm in control. And you know, this is what you're going to play for, and that was it. And you know what? When I finally realized that he was in control and wasn't budging, then I signed. And Glenn was the same way. And I learned tough lessons, you know, but I think they helped me today.
Right. Do you remember what date you were traded to the Edmonton Oilers?
January 4th, 1998.
Do you know how old Jared Spurgeon was that year?
Was he three?
I think he was like 8 or 9.
Oh, okay. So, I didn't even know what year he was born.
Not that
I had no
young.
Idea.
But, I, you know, one of the coolest things that I did when I wrote that Spurgeon story last week is he told me that he had this almost like outer body experience, Bill, that, you know, you walk in his house with Dean Evason, you're carrying a Wild bag that he later finds out has his captaincy jersey in there and a book that Ross Bernstein gave you. And he said that all of a sudden he's sitting there and he just had all this like these memories of him rooting for you as a kid, you and Doug Waite. But then the story that I know, you know, now that you didn't remember at the time, but you had skipping him in line for getting the VO2 test when you were the Islanders captain.
Yeah. I don't know if I skipped him. I think maybe he let me go. I wouldn't
do you want
to
tell that story?
No, you know what, I forgot. I mean I forgot yeah. about it, but Spurge told me that you know, we were testing and there were a bunch of the young kids kind of waiting around, and I just went in to do my testing and told them, I said, don't go anywhere, boys. This won't take long. which I don't know if it was the best message for them, but no, it was a fun training camp. We were up in Moncton. And it was pretty funny to hear the story from Spurge, just because he just, I don't know. Like I still feel like I'm, you know, 25 years old, and I'm not. But to realize that you know, Spurge was from Edmonton, and you know, impressionable, you know, 8 or 9 years old when I was, you know, in. You know, the prime of my career in Edmonton. So it's pretty funny.
What was it like? Like, you've won 2 Stanley Cups as a manager, 2 obviously as a player. On the scale of like all the things you've already achieved as a manager or experience as a manager, what was the experience like of actually handing somebody the captaincy and that type of, because you know more than anybody, because you were a captain, the honor that is bestowed upon somebody. What was it like actually driving to his house, handing him something that you know that this kid absolutely cherished?
It was a great experience. It meant, you know what, I like you said, I was a captain. I know the meaning of it, and I took it very seriously, and I still do. And not everybody gets to do that. You know what? There are a lot of guys that play in the league, but there are only a very select few who have been captains of their team. And it is a huge honor. And I knew that I was about to make one of our players and his family extremely, extremely happy. And it just meant the world to me to be able to do that. And, you know, Spurge is a great guy, and he's got a beautiful family that, you know, they're extremely invested in the Minnesota Wild and how things are run here, how things are, people are treated, and bringing a championship here. And you know, I don't think we could have made a better choice.
One final question before I take a break on just going back to the whole Kaprizov Fiala contract talk. Do you need to re-sign them before you could almost count cap space to know how then sort of proceed with what your next executing your next plan as a GM, or do you have a pretty good sense of, all right, this is what they're going to cost, so if I need to go say acquire a center, that this is what I could pay them?
Yeah, no, I mean we have a pretty good idea of what they'll cost, and we'll kind of earmark for that. But like I said, hey, look, if we can make our team better, and we'll have to figure stuff out a couple months from now, that's what we'll do.
Right. Interesting.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Back here with Billy Guerin. Final, 15, 20 minutes of the show. And again, if you're not an Athletic subscriber, now is the time to get in. theathletic.com/straightfromthesource. You can get in for $3.99 a month. Not only awesome stories, so many cool stories already early this hockey season, but great podcast. Joe Pavelski of the Dallas Stars. He joined Scott Burnside and Pierre LeBrun on Two-Man Advantage this week about the Dallas Stars maybe getting off the ground and actually starting to play some hockey games. The Athletic's Dom Lashisian and ESPN's Greg Wyshynski and Emily Kaplan join Craig Custance for this full 60 this week at The Athletic. And, of course, Billy Guerin joins me now. Billy, first funny Twitter question I love, but I don't know how much you're going to love it. But hockey fan Dan, this is how this question's exactly how I think, okay? He goes, Billy, I know you still respect the Penguins and their organization, but now that you have an unprotected first round pick, are you hoping for a bad year from them?
No, you get yourself into trouble thinking like that. I think there's karma. So you just, you know what? You just let it play out and see where it falls.
But it is kind of funny, Billy. Like, I remember when the league made its decisions this offseason, and how to handle these sort of draft picks and the return to play and everything. And I remember when Jim Rutherford made the decision to keep their first last year and give you the first this upcoming year. I know Wild fans were like up in arms over it. And I actually thought, I'm like, if I were Billy, I'd want it. A non-lottery protected first round pick and just, you know, let's see where the Penguins finish up. I mean, is that a fair, at least, assessment? Is that you'd rather have that than take last year's pick at whatever draft pick they were at, 15, I think it was?
Yeah. You know what? That's one of those things that it's out of my control. That the deal that was struck is that they would be able to pick. So, I mean, we could sit there and try to figure out what they're trying to do and, you know, oh, what would we do if we're sitting in their seat? Yeah, I mean, we talked about things like that. But in the end, yeah, you can't worry about it. Jim's got to decide what's best for his team. And then we'll just go from there. So we were going to get a first round pick either way. And, we're no problems with it being this coming year.
Right. And if anything, it might give you an extra, you either have two first round picks or it gives you an extra chip to play with if you ever want to make moves. Billy, here's a great question. There really is a fine line between getting help where the team needs help now, like the center position, but also keeping what looks like a bright future intact. Where do you kind of see that line and how do you want to navigate it? This is a question from Noah.
Can you read it again?
So basically what he's saying is like, say you have a long-term plan. But all of a sudden you recognize this year that maybe, hey, I need to acquire a center because this team could go on a little run here. You need that, you know, you see a hole, you know, do you alter that plan? Like, where is the fine line?
Yeah. I mean, it depends. I think the most important thing in a situation like that is, you know what, let's be realistic. You know what, if we're going to go on a run, oh, okay. How big of a run do you think we'll go on? Is it worth breaking away from your plan and sacrificing everything that you've kind of set up for, because we've situated ourselves, we feel like we're in a good spot, you know, with having drafted Rossi at 9 this year, having 2 first round picks, having Boldy, we've got some, you know, having, you know, Adam Beckman, having a Kalen Addison, we've got some good young players and we've got more picks coming. So this is part of our plan of, you know, kind of building on the fly and not tearing it down. And so, you know, is the player signed? Is he not signed? Is he a rental? How much do we want to give up? Like all those things are going to have to be taken into account and, you know, will it be worth it or not? I don't know.
By the way, you just reminded me of something. In the Nuke Bjugstad trade, I think it was a conditional 7th. Have those conditions essentially been prorated for this season? Like, I think it was something like 35 points.
Yeah, they have, but 70 games. They okay. have, but I can't remember right now.
I bet. Yeah, it's a 7th round pick. It's not like you need
I'll have to
worry
go
about
back
it every
look.
Second. Yeah. You'll be happy to give up the 7th if you get the first in a lottery pick.
Right.
That's just me talking. Let me ask you about expansion. You made the decision recently to extend the contract to Marcus Foligno, which us beat writers thank you because he is an absolute gem to deal with.
Yeah.
Great quote and all that stuff. The one thing that you did say on the conference call the other day is that you didn't sign him to lose him. Could you say what you meant by that? I mean, you know, do you feel like you have a sense of how you'll navigate that? Could it mean an eventual trade? Could it mean going to one of the players and asking them, at least for the purposes of expansion, to waive their no move?
Yeah.
Do you know what that means?
I honestly, Mike, it means exactly what I said. I mean, we didn't sign him to lose him. So, you know, we want to keep him in Minnesota for a long time. And, you know, it's tough to kind of speculate on the situations because we don't know what changes will be made before then. But we love Marcus. I mean, he is, you know what, he's a great guy. He's an impactful player, positive impact player on our team. And, He's got great leadership qualities that he brings every single day in one way or another, and he's a guy that we want to keep around.
Andrew asks, how does the trade market look early in the season? Hot, cold, any chatter? You talked a little bit about it, but it's pretty quiet right now.
Yeah, it's pretty quiet right now. I don't, you know, my phone's not burning up by any stretch. So it comes and goes.
Except when they ask for Kaprizov, I bet. So.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's when it goes cold.
Davis asks, this is a good question for no longer a first-year GM, but how do you balance making close relationships with the roster, yet stay far enough away to make difficult decisions like you did this offseason? I remember seeing you in Ashley Vale, a year and a half ago. You were basically in your first month as GM and seeing how you're getting to know all these players. And I was thinking I wonder how that will eventually affect a first year GM if he's got to move them. Well, you kind of showed this off season that doesn't really affect you. But how do you, is that tough when you really do learn these people, their families, all that stuff, and yet you have to, make a long-term decision for the future of the franchise and for the good of the franchise?
Yeah. I mean, it's tough. They're all good guys. And you know what, the one thing about me and I've had to, I guess, come to grips with this is just, I got to be who I am. And I mm-hmm. like being around people. I like, knowing these guys. I like, knowing their families and things like that. And so when you have to kind of pull the trigger on a trade, and nobody knows better than me. I understand what kind of upheaval is happening in their family. I know it. And most of it falls on the wife, and it really does, because hey, look, we get traded, we go, we're off to the new city, we got 20 new buddies, and we just start playing. It's what's left behind is the real work. So I understand what's happening in that household, but I also know that they'll be okay on the other side when all the dust is settled. And I have to, conduct business as always. So, you never really want to make that call, but you do it.
You actually, didn't you tell me that you recently moved out from downtown Minneapolis out west? And didn't you say that you learned that firsthand when you watched Kara, just like Kara basically like, look, let me handle this.
Oh yeah. There was something, I forget what. I don't know. The movers put something somewhere and I was looking for it. And I was like, no, it's gotta be here. And she looked at me. She's like, are you serious? I'm like, yeah. She's like, how many times have you done this? And I'm like, and she's like, look it, I know what I'm doing. I've seen this before. It's going to be either here, here, or here. And it was in the first place she told me. And I was just like, all right, you know what? You know what you're doing. I'll just shut up and you tell me what to do. And it worked better that way.
Yeah. I was talking to Danielle Spurgeon about this the other day. She was saying that one of the biggest things that she's concerned about this season is that all these new players and their wives, we're in the middle of a pandemic. They really can't go to games, that she's got to start coming up with unique ways to make them feel included. That's something you've got to appreciate, is how hard this is on the Talbots, the Beninos, the Johansons to come here. And we're in the middle of a pandemic. They've, two of those players only have 1 year left on their deal. They might not even meet people.
Yeah. And that's, it's definitely difficult. But again, in naming Spurge the captain, it's a package deal. And Danielle is she's a sharp, very smart, very, very good personality, like really warm person. Pretty confident she'll figure something out, and she's already on stuff like that. So we're really happy about it. And Kara loves her, and she just says, she's just all in on this, and she'll make it happen.
Yeah, yeah. By the way, that feeling's mutual. Danny was going on and on to me about Kara. So
yeah, oh, that's good.
Pretty cool. Yep. Final couple minutes with Billy Guerin. Billy, I'll just go through a couple more Twitter questions. Connor asks, obviously the GM circle is pretty small and people aren't one to share their tricks, but who are your biggest mentors? I mean, you've talked to me before about your respect level for guys like Jimmy Rutherford and Lou Lamoriello. Anybody else that you've gotten tight with on the circuit, so to speak?
Yeah, you know, like Jim's somebody I'm very close to. Obviously Lou Lamoriello is somebody that that I've learned a lot from and have the utmost respect. The guy I just hired, Randy Sexton. Randy's two-time GM, and he's taught me so much. In the game, and you know, when I had an opportunity to bring him on with me as a senior advisor, I didn't hesitate. So, but there are a lot of guys. I learned from all these guys, and they're all, you know, they're all willing to share. And I like talking to the young guys, and I like talking to the guys that have been around. Like David Poyle's always fun to talk to, and mm-hmm. Doug Armstrong, who was my GM in Dallas, is great to talk to. He's given me some great advice, and I think you can learn something from everybody. And I'm working hard at trying to have good relationships with everybody. And I just think it's if you have a good relationship with somebody, it's easier to make a deal. And I think one of the best pieces of advice was from Jim, and it's just to try to make a fair trade, make it where it works for both teams. And he goes, that way you'll always have a trade partner out there. And I just thought that was great advice. And I enjoy talking to all the guys. They're it's a good group.
Your buddy's at Bergevin, right?
Yeah. Berge is he's always
a beauty.
He's always fun to talk to. And sometimes you have to, he's always got a good joke. At the meetings, he sits to my right and Rob Blake sits to my left, and Blakey's one of the nicest guys you could ever meet. And then, I have Burge on my other side, and he's always up to something. It's like the angel on one side and the devil on the other. It's pretty funny, but Burge is always fun to be around. I love the guy.
Yeah, that's awesome. A couple more questions. The Dogfather, this is a good one. If Billy could bring in one center that you used to play with, who would it be? Like, who's the – you've played with Crosby, you've played with Waite, you've played with so many good centers in your career.
Yeah,
put one in the middle of the Wild top line, who would
I'd put Crosby.
Yeah, was a stupid question.
It was not a stupid question. It was a good question.
Not from him. From me just saying who would it be.
Yeah.
But any other centers that you absolutely like? Waite was
Dougie Waite's the best.
Like you and him were electric.
Yeah, Dougie and I are just we became such great friends over the years. And the one thing I loved about Dougie was that he was a skill guy, a playmaker. But I don't know if people remember this about him. Like Dougie was tough too, and like I always knew we're going into these tough games in Calgary or Vancouver or whatever. And shit happened back then. They were tough games. I always knew like Dougie was going to, jump in there with me. Like you were never out there alone. And he's just that type of guy and great teammate, like just a great teammate, like the ultimate teammate. I love playing with him.
A couple more hockey questions. And then I got a couple fun ones from fans as well. Let me ask you about some of these prospects that you have coming. Like Matt Boldy is the one that obviously he's kind of the new big thing amongst Wild fans after getting to watch him at World Juniors and seeing how good he was. He got off to a slow start at the beginning of his freshman year, was awesome at the end of last year, and then he's just picked it up, continued it this year for a really good BC team. Does that change your projection? Not projection, but your sort of path that you want to take with him? Like, could we conceivably see him after his sophomore year signed to an entry level contract?
It all depends on how the second half goes for him. The progression that he's making is good. It's exactly what we want. You know what, even though you struggle the first part of your freshman year, it's the way you end the year. and he ended on a high note. He picked up where he left off. You know what? He progressed and he had a great World Junior. You know what? Let's see how he does the second half, and then we'll keep talking about it.
How about Kalen Addison? You could have put him on the taxi squad, but I assume that he's in Iowa because you really want him playing.
Yeah. And we did debate putting Kalen on the taxi squad just to get the experience of being around the NHL guys. But when it comes down to it, we just felt like right now he'd get more out of being, in Iowa with Timmy Army. He can be with John Odgers every single day, you know, lifting, training, getting stronger, getting faster, and just putting that time in. And then when the games start down there, he can just, you know, continue to play big minutes.
But by the way, the taxi squad just acts as Iowa, right? It doesn't need to be an injury or illness for you to say, hey, you know what? We really would like a Luke Johnson in the lineup tonight. You could actually call him up, so to speak, right?
Okay.
Hovanov, he's starting to score. He's not in the KHL. He's in their sort of junior league. Do you see him as somebody that has a future in this game?
I do. He's extremely smart and skilled. I'm not worried that he's not in the KHL. I mean, the KHL is a good league, and he's still a young kid. I'm just glad that he's playing this year. And he's getting a lot of ice time and starting to produce and things like that. So,
looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Victorinox, the makers of the original Swiss Army knife, have been a reliable companion for life's everyday challenges, mastering functionality, innovation, iconic design, and uncompromising quality with its products. The Victorinox Swiss Army Knife provides you with all the things you don't think about until you need it. Tweezers, a screwdriver, and even a corkscrew. With the Victorinox Swiss Army Knife, you can be prepared to master everyday life. You can find Victorinox Swiss Army Knives at Dick's Sporting Goods.
I think that's the most important thing.
Two more players I wanted to ask you about was Brennan Minnell. Obviously, there was he decided to go to the KHL rather than resign. I've been reading a lot about all this like unrest that's going on in Minsk right now. I mean, is there a chance before that mid-February deadline that you guys might try to bring him back and sign him, or do you think he's definitely staying for the year there?
I don't know. I haven't talked to his representation in a long time. That was a decision that he made for good reason in his mind, and we're supportive. Like, you know, we never want to see a guy kind of jump ship and go over there, but you know, we still own his rights. And if he wants to come back to North America and try to make it in the NHL, it's going to be through Minnesota. So we're glad that he's playing well and having an impact over there. We just, you know, want him to be safe. And if he decides to come back, then we'll talk about it.
It did seem like that was probably not the, I don't want to say the right decision on his standpoint, but maybe a short-sighted one where it's like, you just got to put in your time. He was a guy that you actually gave his, NHL debut to last year. Will that sort of be held against him, or you still look at him as a quality asset?
No, I won't hold things like that against players. All these guys are trying to do is make it. And sometimes you get frustrated. Sometimes you jump the gun, but that's just because you care and because you want to make it. So whatever decision was made, it's not personal. He's just trying to do what's best for him. So, if he wants to come back, then we'll for sure talk about it. He's a good player.
Last hockey question. Your goaltending down in Iowa, what is the plan there? Do you see Hunter Jones coming in as the number one, or will it be a battle between Barabow and Jones?
Yeah, we'll see how it shakes out. I mean, we want them both playing a lot of games, that's for sure. I think, you know, it was tough because Jonesy had a little groin tweak in training camp and couldn't skate the last few days. And Baribeau looked really good. And, you know, we just got to see how it shakes out, whether it's it could end up being a 50-50 split. We don't know.
Right. By the way, I'm doing a big Hunter Jones story next week on his music career. I don't know if you know, he's a big musician. So
I did not know that.
Yeah, you could go on YouTube, search Hunter Jones music, and you'll find it.
All right, I will.
One night when you're bored. Last two questions, sort of fun ones on a lighter side. Philip asks, after 18 months in Minneapolis, any favorite food spots? Again, you haven't gotten to really enjoy the state of hockey just because of this pandemic, but what's your favorite spots, if you're willing to say?
You know what? There's so many good spots. You know,
it's wife are foodies, right?
Yeah, we love going out to dinner and just, you know what? It's awesome. I mean, love J.D. Hoyt's.
Yep.
I love J.D. Hoyt's. I love going for the Buddy Bowls.
Pat Monahue is the
he's a great guy. Good martinis there too. I love getting a Buddy Bowl loaded up and then like one pork chop. That's a great spot. Oh man, this is a great question. These are ones like I'm getting stumped now, but there's so many good ones. You know, Spoon and Stable is a place I love. I mean, that's Gavin Kaysen's place, and you know, they do all our cooking. And you know, God, you know what? The burgers at Parlor, those are really good. Oh yeah, those are for real. Honestly, one of the best restaurants in town is our locker room. Our chefs are the best. we better than a lot of people. But you know what? That's one thing about Minneapolis. Minneapolis, St. Paul. There's so many great places. And you know what? We eat at this place quite a bit in St. Paul called the Pillbox.
Never heard of that.
It's new. It's right at Tria. They've got an awesome Juicy Lucy. And then there's another place that we eat at is the Afro Deli.
Okay.
And we go there for lunch quite a bit, and they have amazing like Mediterranean style food. And there's so many good spots.
That's awesome. Last question. State of Hoppy wants to know, what's your favorite Minnesota beer? As you can tell, he's a beer guy.
Ooh, anything with a label on it. how do I choose? There's so many local breweries yeah. that it's tough to name one. I mean, Surly's are really good. I'm trying to think of some of the other ones, but yeah, honestly,
so you like hoppy beer.
Yeah, I like, to be honest with you, I like it all. I like dark beers, light beers, pilsners, lagers, IPAs. Yeah. But yeah, if you're going real hoppy, it's you know, there's probably, you have a couple of those before dinner, and then you know, you switch to wine or martini or something, because the hoppy ones fill you up. Like that sounds so old, but they do.
Yeah, I've pretty much quit beer. wasn't very good for my weight.
I'm doing dry January.
Oh, nice.
And I honestly, I've dropped a ton of weight, and I have never felt, I haven't felt this good in a long time.
It's funny, you haven't seen me in a while. I've dropped a bunch too, and I
good
hope
for you.
Next time, hopefully by the next time I see you, I haven't gained it all back. But so I can be a yo-yo. But I've dropped a ton since I last saw you. So,
oh, that's good. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Let me ask you just lastly. I mean, this has got to be the weirdest road trip for you. I mean, there's nothing. You know, there's very few more fun stops than going to LA and LA Live and going to Anaheim and going out to Newport Beach or something like that. You were pretty much on lockdown in LA. You have a little more freedom in Anaheim. What can you guys do out there?
Not much. Just because, you know what, the NHL protocols that we're following, you know, like in LA, it was shut tight. Like it's a ghost town. Out here, you can see people eating on patios and things like that. But we're not doing that. We're eating in our hotels. We're eating in our rooms. You know, we go and get our food and bring it back to our room and eat there. It's really a different trip. It's one great thing about, you know, being in the National Hockey League is traveling around and, you know, when you go out to dinners with your coaching staff or your teammates or whatever, it's really when you get to know the guys. And, you know, we're missing that a bit right now. And, you know, one of my favorite places in LA is Mastro's. And
yeah, I love it.
I always look forward to going there. Yeah. And, you know, but they're not going out of business. So we'll catch them next time.
Yeah. How it's funny you said that because my last meal on the road last season was in, Costa Mesa there?
Costa Mesa,
The Mastros. Yeah. And I walked in there with Anthony LaPanta and I looked left and there you were entertaining the coaching staff. Who knew that would be our last meal? The last meal of last season. Who knew?
It's unbelievable. Oh, I could go for that right now.
Yeah. No, exactly. There's nothing. I was in Vegas in November or October and I went to Mastros there. It's just phenomenal.
So, yeah, it's great. It's, you know what? That's some of the, even like through my playing days, you always just try to hit the good spots. And you know what, when all these things started coming out online, like, you know, like for lunch, I'd be like, okay, where did Andrew Zimmern go here? Or where did Guy Fieri go here? Or, you know, and I'd do a bunch of those things. And then for dinner, you'd try to hit the new hot spots or whatever. And it's fun. It's fun. And, you know, you gotta get off the beaten path every once in a while and try local places and, you know, switch it up.
I can't wait till life's back to normal. It's been bizarre covering these games from home, but as I told you last week, I couldn't justify going out to Cali where you can't even cover practices and skates and leave the hotel. So I'll go to Denver.
I'd wait it out.
Yeah, exactly. But can't wait till life's back to normal. Billy, as always, I really appreciate it. You're, I think, returning champion. I think you've been on like five or six of these podcasts now. But, you know, I think it's always awesome for the fans to hear from you and get a little sense of what you're thinking. And what were you thinking, like by next week, have a number one center here?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, we'll just, you know, pick one out of thin air. But no, thanks for having me on, Mike. I always like coming on and I hope our fans enjoy it. I try to be as open as I can be without giving away all the secrets. So I hope everybody enjoys it.
Yep. Thanks, Billy. And again, check out our comments section for each podcast episode, The Athletic app, and rate and subscribe to Straight from the Source on Apple. If you aren't already a subscriber, go to theathletic.com/straightfromthesource and receive a subscription for just $3.99 per month. Thanks, Billy. Enjoy your day out in Anaheim, not LA.
Thanks a lot, Mike. We'll talk to you soon.